Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guest this week, mystery novelist Robin Timmerman. Robin, how do you choose a setting for your books?
Yes, I thought about this question. I didn't actually choose the setting, at least not as a setting for a future mystery series. I was just writing a book. Maybe there are some writers who sit down for a few nights or weeks and exhaustively research setting and characters for a series, and there's certainly advantages to that, as I've found out. That's a great idea. But I've had to adapt as I go along. Finally, by the third book, I drew a rough map of the island and the logistics who lived there and where events happened. I should say maybe some very super organized people work it all out. The setting was the setting of the story I was telling at the time, you know, of the Pity of the Winds.
And so how important is the setting then, for instance, to the atmosphere and the characters and the action? Is it a very secondary thing or integral?
I'd say crucially. From my own reading and also from what I'm writing, just simple decisions, whether you've got an urban or a rural background. I'm in total awe of writers like Rankin and Robinson who create entire city police departments with a big cast of regular characters. I've got an island, a small town, a rural area, that offers me enough scope for action, and it's manageable too, and it helps to know the flora and fauna so well. I haven't traveled much, like some people have been everywhere in the world.
So have you based it on a place you actually know, or is it a composite, perhaps?
Well, of course I get asked that, and it's the island is across the causeway from a town called Bonneville. So if I go and speak at the Belleville Library, which is across the way from Prince Edward County, people seem to have fun trying to guess what area the story, and they enjoy that. One of our real estate people who Alec knows, he asked him, you know, hey, am I the evil real estate dealer in the book? You know, so I guess people do some guessing that way. So I think it's like writing any book. You pull together a lot of
things, yeah. Writing what you know.
Yeah, I'm one of those.
So after the publication of The Pity of the Winds, what encouraged you to go on writing stories?
Well, I had written this book about this big issue in my community, and I published it, a terrifying experience, because nowadays I doubt there's anything like we used to read about, where publishers take people to lunch and talk about their books and rave about it and encourage them, and by the time it comes out, you might feel pretty good about it. But when you send off your manuscript on Word somewhere, and then a few weeks later it's in print, you say, oh my God, you know, like you just, it's quite a shock. However, it worked out okay, because people asked if there would be another book. That was a surprise to me, right? And they wanted to read more about the characters. It was very gratifying. They said reading the book was like a walk down Picton Main Street. The characters were real and believable. People telephoned me. And then the book won the County Reads event, an exciting honor in our local bookstore. I followed up with two books, Season of Deceit and Crimes of Summer. County Magazine wrote that the Jakes are smart, sexy, and likable. So I had created, it was a thrill. It was just a thrill. And then I always felt the writer's itch working at me. I wanted to know what happened to my characters, so a new story would start to work its way out of my thought. Crimes of Summer, for instance, started from a phrase I scribbled sometime while writing the former book. And it literally just said, Pete's army buddy comes to visit. I still have the piece of paper. I'm sentimental that way. So I knew that the buddy was going to be a catalyst in some way for the story, and I knew that Allie wasn't going to like him. So that would cause some difficulties for the Jakes as well, a kind of subplot that works into the bigger plot. You'd have to read the book to see how that plays out. So that's what I mean about my characters. They pull me in. And then I have, of course, other influences for plots.
Okay, so now your latest release, Out of the Running, is the fifth book in the series. Still includes Pete Jakes and his wife, Allie. Mm-hmm. And
their daughter now.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so tell us a little bit about this one.
At the end of Pity of the Winds, they were expecting, and I said, when people ask me why I went on, I wanted to see that baby.
I'm sure your readers did, too.
So Out of the Running is the fifth book in the series and features all the familiar characters from the previous books, plus, of course, some new villains. There was a longer gap this time, but I got the itch again, thinking about Pete and Allie and the other Middle Island folks and wondering what they were up to. The story centered around an island marathon to raise funds for the local hospital. The influx of tourists may be good for island business, but it's a headache for Chief Halstead and Officer Jakes, especially when bodies start to appear on the marathon route, and it seems that some people are literally dying to run. So we actually do have an annual marathon there. I guess you get the ideas from that. Literally, the plots develop as you go along. I used to wonder when people said that how that could be true, but it is true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get a bunch of people together and then things happen.
Well, perhaps you could read to us from Out of the Running.
June, sweet June. On Middle Island, the ditches glow with spreading stands of orange daylilies. The roadsides are exploding with pink and purple phlox, rivaling the best works of the Impressionists. Even the graveled road edges produce the color and scent of pink clover, the gossamer puffs of hairy goatsbeard, and the exquisite weave of Queen Anne's lace. In the swamp, a tall blue heron fishes, green frogs rest on lily pods. But at the sound of approaching thudding footsteps, she hesitates. The heron grows still, the frogs dive beneath the lily pads. The other larger beings move quickly on the path, breathing hard as they pass. The big snapper slides back into the water. The runners continue, paying no heed. They will spare no time to savor summer's beauty. There's ground to cover and a stopwatch clicking in a pocket. They disappear around a curve in the path. The morning is quiet again. The water creatures return to their various pursuits. The snapper scrambles with her scaly claws and pulls herself up on the log. It weighs nearly 20 pounds. It's a big effort, but the disturbance is gone, at least for the moment, and the sun feels so good. Dot, dot, dot. The first thing they notice was the shoes. Good quality running shoes sticking out of the grassy verge that bordered the track. Chief Halstead had given out only terse details. A couple of women found the guy near the kilometer 8 post. His feet were sticking out of the bushes onto the road. Dead? Seems to be. The callers were out on a practice run. Pete slowed at the Benson crossroad turn and pulled off into the grass. He drew up beside a red Honda, the only car there. Luckily, this was a section of the upcoming marathon route where the runners would be traveling right on the actual road, making easy access for the ambulance. A woman was slumped on the roadside. She looked ill. Her friend was tending to her, offering a water bottle. "Oh, thank goodness you're here," she said fervently, standing up. "I think my friend here is in shock." Chief Halstead introduced himself, and Pete moved quickly across the road. He assured her an ambulance was coming. She took a breath and seemed a sensible woman and not unduly overcome like her friend. Ginny was running on that side, and she noticed the color of his shirt. She thought it was a clump of bright flowers, I guess. I heard her cry out, so I stopped. She was pointing into the ditch, and her face was white as a sheet. When I pushed the weeds aside a bit, I could see the blue and white marathon shirt on a man. "Did you touch him? Could he speak?" "I work at the admitting desk of a city hospital," she said. "I'm not a nurse, but I know enough to check for vital signs." That explained her relative calm, he thought. "He was face down and there was blood under his head," she went on. "I told Ginny to call 911 right away. I went to check on the man a couple of times, but there was no change and I couldn't find a pulse, and I didn't try to turn him over." "Chief," Pete called, "can you come over here a minute?" He excused himself. "Wrap a sweater around your friend," he told the woman, "and keep her warm." Pete was crouched in the roadside weeds, looking down at the victim. A man, as she had said, face down in the dirt. He wore running sweats, the marathon blue t-shirt, and the telltale sneakers. The matching cap had flown off and lay in the weeds some distance away. Pete indicated the awkwardly sprawled legs, the arms thrown out in a desperate attempt to break a fall, stated the obvious. "He's been hit by a vehicle." Halstead nodded, his expression grim. "Damn," he stood and scowled at the mute trees that lined this bit of the road. "I knew this marathon business was going to be bad news."
Thanks for that, Robin.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you so much for coming in and talking about your work. Where can listeners purchase your books?
Distribution's difficult for self-published people. Like, if they're ever in Prince Edward County, they can go to our bookstore, and they are online. You know, you can purchase them there, and also they're in e-books. So just Amazon or Chapters or something like that.
And listeners, to connect with us here at the program and to send out your comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs, go and visit our website, wordonthehills.com. At the website, you'll find all our broadcasts are archived, so you can listen to them from anywhere and at any time. We'd love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs. Thanks for tuning into the show. We hope you'll join us again for another program next week, Sunday at 1 p.m. right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.